Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this open floor hearing. Can I just check firstly that you can all hear me? Yes, good. Thank you. My name is Philip James Asquith, and sitting with me is David Brock. We've been appointed by the Secretary of State as the examining authority under Section 65 of the Planning Act 2008. To examine an application for development consent for a nationally significant infrastructure project and to report with recommendation to the Secretary of State for Transport. The project is the provision of a rail freight interchange, the application being made by Roxhill Junction 15 Limited, who I shall refer to at this hearing as the applicant. In summary, the proposed development comprises an intermodal freight terminal, including container storage and HGV parking, rail sidings to serve individual warehouses, and the provision of an aggregates facility as part of the intermodal freight terminal, with the capability of also providing a rapid rail freight facility. Secondly, up to 468,000 square metres, that's approximately 5 million square feet, gross internal area of warehousing and ancillary buildings, with additional floor space provided in the form of mezzanines. Thirdly, a secure, dedicated HGV parking area of approximately 120 spaces, including driver welfare facilities to meet the needs of HGVs visiting the site or the intermodal terminal. Fourthly, new road infrastructure and works to the existing road network, including the provision of a new access and associated works to the A508, a new bypass to the village of Road, improvements to Junction 15 and to Junction 15A of the M1 motorway, the A45, and other highway improvements at junctions on the local network and related traffic management measures. Fifthly, strategic landscaping and tree planting, including diverted public rights of way. And lastly, earthworks and demolition of existing structures on the main site. I would stress at this point, and just to make absolutely clear, that the examination of which this open floor hearing is a part is solely concerned with the application that I've just described. As you'll no doubt all be aware, that a second application for a development consent order for a rail freight interchange has very recently been submitted to the Planning Inspectorate, this being the Rail Central application. That application is currently being considered by the Inspectorate as to whether it is suitable to be accepted as a properly made application. If it is accepted, then the application would be subject to a separate examination by a different examining authority. Right, just to outline the procedure for this particular hearing. In terms of if the fire alarm goes, then it's the real McCoy, I'm afraid, and so we will all need to vacate the building. The emergency exits are well labelled, and the assembly point is on the car park behind. Toilets are out through the doors and on the right-hand side. Could I please ask that if you've got phones or electronic devices, those are in silent mode whilst the hearing is in session. The agenda for tonight's hearing was attached as Annex H to our letter of the 10th of September. Hopefully you've all managed to have a copy of that or have seen a copy of that. All interested parties who wish to make oral representations have been invited to attend and to participate in this hearing if they wish. Participation is subject to the powers of our control of the hearing. Now, we've suggested a set speaking time guide of 5 minutes per submission. A time limit is a standard rule used in most open floor hearings to ensure that if there are a lot of people who wish to speak and attend, then available time is divided fairly between the speakers. This open floor hearing is just that. It doesn't have a subject matter controlled agenda. This means that you can bring up any matter arising from the application that is also important and relevant to the decision that will be taken under the Planning Act 2008. But if you do bring up matters that are not important and relevant, we may interject briefly just to explain this and may ask you to move on. However, in general terms, your time in this hearing is your own to say what you wish. There are a lot of people in the room. I've got a list of several people who've previously indicated a wish to speak, together with some people who've turned up tonight also indicating a wish to speak. What I would ask, in view of the numbers of people that do wish to speak, that it would greatly assist in making sure that everyone is heard and that the hearing finishes at a reasonable time. That if having heard a previous speaker cover points that you might have wanted to make or were intending making, it may be helpful just to simply indicate your agreement with the points raised by the relevant speaker and in relation to the relevant specific issues that you wanted to address. We will have a record of all the points made, and a point that's repeated won't gain any greater weight through being continually repeated. All hearings, and this goes back to the point I've just made really, all hearings associated with the National Infrastructure Examinations are digitally recorded, as this one is being. Now, the recordings are uploaded onto the National Infrastructure website documents page for this application. And this step is taken so that any member of the public who is interested in the application and the examination can find out what's happened, whether they are able to attend tonight or not. So this is why I'm using a microphone, and you'll see also that there's a microphone on the table in front. So that if you are intending speaking, I will ask you to come and sit at the table at the front with the microphone when it's your turn. If anybody is intending making a recording of the hearing themselves, any group or organisation, whether you want to use social media, report, film or record the hearing, you're free to do so, but please do it responsibly and with proper consideration for other parties. I should point out that there are representatives from the applicant here tonight, but they've indicated prior to the hearing that their presence is one of a watching brief. And I would remind people that the examination process is primarily a written one, though as with tonight, there are opportunities to be heard orally. I would expect that should the applicant wish to respond to anything that might be said tonight by you, they will do so in writing. The timetable with our letter of the 10th of September provides a deadline of the 6th of November for any responses and written submissions of oral cases. There is a further deadline of the 20th of November for any comments on the submissions that are made on the 6th of November. With Mr. Brock and myself tonight are Kate Mignano, who is sitting at the table to my right. She's the case manager for this particular examination. And also with her is Ewa Sherman and Dean Alford, who are case officers. If you've got any queries about the administrative matters regarding the examination, then Kate, who's now reappeared, is the person that you would need to speak to, but please do so outside the hearing. Given that you now know who's involved from the Planning Inspectorate, it would be good if I could find out who is expecting to speak tonight. We have a list provided some time ago, and I've also got a list of people who have indicated a wish to speak tonight. Andrew Bodman, Rod Sellers, Mark Redding, Stephen Blythe, Owen Coop, Dina Noller, and there, I believe, are some further people who may wish to speak, depending on what is or isn't raised. So, unless any of you have got any particular time constraints, I would propose to take the speakers in the order I've just read out. In terms of the, I believe, six people who've indicated that they may wish to speak, can I just have an indication from you as to who you may be at this stage? Right, okay. If you do wish to speak, then we'll get your name and when you come forward, or whether you, the roving mic is provided for you to speak. Really, that's, I think, all I need to say by way of introduction. Are there any matters that anyone wishes to raise before we hear from our first speaker? No? Thank you. In that case, Andrew Bodman, would you like to come forward? Yeah, right. Right. Mr. Bodman, you'll need to activate your microphone, and if you can speak fairly close to it. There will be a timer up on the board here, so you'll see that as a countdown. So 5 minutes, hopefully you'll be able to say what you need to speak and say in that time. So over to you, Mr. Bodman.
Good evening. Thank you. I'm Andrew Bodman. I'm a local resident. I observe that the host authority of Northamptonshire County Council has not been listed as a provider of a statement of common ground concerning rail matters, although Network Rail and Warwickshire County Council have been asked to do so. From the comments made so far by Warwickshire County Council, it appears that their main interest is to facilitate the ability of the proposed Rugby Parkway station to be served by passenger trains in future in the event that plans for this station proceed. It is conceivable that Warwickshire County Council may be more familiar with the Chiltern line than with the West Coast Main line. In my view, the absence of a statement of common ground from Northamptonshire County Council concerning rail is significant. The host authority is familiar with the usage of the West Coast Main line, including the element which passes through Northampton. It has gained an insight into future usage through a careful study of Network Rail's West Coast Mainline Capacity Plus document, as well as using other sources of information. Northamptonshire County Council is therefore well placed to assess the likely impact of additional freight train paths to serve the proposed Northampton Gateway SRFI and their likely effect on passenger rail services. In their response to the Northampton Gateway's statutory consultation, Northamptonshire County Council concluded as follows. We also note in the emerging West Coast Capacity Plus study referred to above, Network Rail have identified a significant future constraint in capacity between the Denbigh Hall North Junction and Milton Keynes Central in particular, but also over the entirety of the Northampton Loop, such that increasing freight services over the loop might require a reduction in the passenger service to Northampton. Roxhill does not appear to have taken on board these issues raised by Northamptonshire County Council over 10 months ago concerning rail. It's my understanding that Northamptonshire County Council is unable to provide a statement of common ground in respect of rail because there appears to be a lack of common ground. With the greatest of respect to Warwickshire County Council, I would suggest the host authority's written representation may provide a clearer picture of the impact of Northampton Gateway's additional freight trains than the neighbouring authority's statement of common ground on rail. I would be happy to provide a copy of Northamptonshire County Council's response to Northampton Gateway's statutory consultation to give you an initial view of the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bodman.
One question, Mr. Bodman. You mentioned capacity constraints between Denbigh and, I didn't get the other
Denbigh Hall North Junction and Milton Keynes Central. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bodden. Mr. Sellers is the next speaker. Yes, you might need to be fairly close to it, Mr. Sellers.
Absolutely, yes. Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Rod Sellers, and I live here in Collingtree. I speak today on behalf of a group of 29 parish councils all around the proposed site and who have registered as an interested party under the group name of Parishes Against Pollution. Now, they're all listed in the note I sent to the case officer. And I could read them all out, but I think they're all clearly indicated there. Many will have registered individually and will be making their own written representations. I've been asked to highlight the common ground between these 29 parishes, which is a shared concern over the cumulative impact of traffic-related developments in the region and the likely consequences for air, noise and light pollution. And they've all adopted a joint statement expressing concern at the concentration of growth in this area and alarm at the likely environmental impacts. So we want to table four points of fact, not an opinion or assertion, but self-evident fact. Firstly, the fact that the proposed site is in direct conflict with the currently adopted West Northamptonshire Joint Core Planning Strategy, which was confirmed as sound by a planning inquiry in 2014, and when representations to include the proposed site were specifically rejected by the inspector. Secondly, the fact that the purpose-designed Daventry International Rail Freight Terminal, DIRFT, is only 18 miles further up the M1, with planned capacity for another 20 years. The strategic value of the proposed site is questioned, as the inspector also said in his report, that because of DIRFT, there is no overriding local need for a major new strategic employment allocation on a greenfield site in the open countryside. And Northampton Borough Council has also very recently resolved, at their last meeting, in fact, to ask the Secretary of State for Transport to urgently review the policy guidelines on the location of SFRIs. Thirdly, the fact that the land proposed is currently attractive rural landscape, as anyone who has walked the main footpath will know. It provides 500 acres of open countryside and farmland. It's the setting for four conservation villages. It's of archaeological interest, and it's a green lung and buffer between urban Northampton and the more rural areas. This is despite being bounded by two air quality management areas and a hotspot for both air and noise pollution, being alongside one of the busiest sections of the M1, which of course is soon to be widened, and having a connecting local road network already under strain from traffic overload. And finally, fourthly, the fact that the West Northamptonshire Planning Strategy forecasts over 42,600 new homes by 2029, potentially creating an additional 300,000 traffic movements a day in the plan area. That's without the additional 1,600 movements a day predicted for Northampton Gateway. And the overall view of local communities is enough is enough. So as a group of 29 parishes, we simply say this: it conflicts with planning policy, is very close to DIRF, is vulnerable to yet further environmental impact, and it's in an area already under pressure from other developments. We respectfully urge that these self-evident factors are kept firmly in mind as the examination process continues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sellers. Mr. Redding, please, from Blissworth Parish Council. Just whilst Mr. Redding is setting up, I just would urge you perhaps to refrain from clapping. This is a statutory inquiry as such, rather than a hearing. I understand there's clearly strong feelings, but it would be I would be grateful if you could try and refrain from clapping if you agree with particular speakers. Thank you. Yes, we might have jazz hands possibly, but right. Sorry, Mr. Redding.
Yes, Mark Redding. I'm a resident of Blisworth. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of Blisworth Parish Council and wanted to raise two issues. The first in relation to the potential isolated nature of the examination process, and the second in relation to capacity and engineering issues on the West Coast Main Line. However, after attending the preliminary meeting yesterday and witnessing Rail Central's QC attempting to intertwine his client into the Northampton Gateway examination, and then hearing the suggestion that a joint rail capacity study be undertaken, I am sure by now you are starting to form your own opinions as to whether it's going to be possible to judge his application in complete isolation. On the second issue, the proving of the network's ability to accommodate even one SRFI is something that we as a community have been pushing for clarity on for nearly 3 years now, but to no avail, despite the efforts of our Member of Parliament, the Right Honourable Andrea Leadsom. Network Rail first requested that Rail Central carry out a feasibility study on the wider network as far back as 2013, and here in 2018, at the business end of two applications, we are still no clearer as to the engineering feasibility, nor individual or collective capacity of the West Coast Main Line, or the wider strategic network. This is and has been incredibly frustrating, but we are where we are. Hopefully, without too much repetition of ground covered yesterday, I would just like to try to add to the rail debate. On the 12th of April 2017, Martin Frobisher, Route Managing Director at Network Rail, wrote to the Right Honourable Andrea Leadsom stating, "There are a number of potential developments, including Rail Central and Northampton Gateway, who want to connect to the Northampton Loop. Our view that is that not every proposal can safely connect to this stretch of the railway due to the high levels of existing traffic." Whilst fairly definitive, Network Rail have chosen to elaborate no further on this statement. In their strategic case study for HS2, the Department for Transport stated, "The West Coast Main Line remains highly constrained, meaning the route is operating close to capacity in the peak, and it is challenging to increase service levels still further." The 2016 Freight Network study declared the intent of routing services cross-country to avoid the capacity and performance issues of travelling across London and on two congested main lines. In the next few years, the West Coast Main Line will have to deal with the challenge of increased passenger services to Northampton, the infeed of trains from East-West Rail at Bletchley, and the aspirational 20 additional freight paths required by the Daventry International Rail Freight Terminal expansion. The strategic freight network sets out the requirement for the core routes, one of the objectives of which is to minimise freight via London and protect the West Coast Main Line south of Nuneaton for enhanced passenger services. There are currently four SRFIs looking to significantly increase freight traffic on this southern section of the West Coast Main Line. The two under consideration here, the Daventry expansion, which 4 years after obtaining consent has no new railhead and no rail-connected warehouses, and the West Midlands interchange. This unprecedented development is clearly in conflict with the national freight strategy previously outlined, and also contrary to a core principle in the national policy statement that SRFI development should take account of investment in capacity enhancements rather than precede them. Further to yesterday's debate, we would therefore welcome early clarity around the capacity issue. If Network Rail do not believe that all competing uses can be accommodated, then why is the community being subjected to the stresses of opposing two separate proposals when only one or neither may be theoretically feasible? In establishing some clarity, it may reveal a clearer examination path to follow and a significantly improved chance of policy objectives being achieved. If all the SRFIs currently being built or proposed in the Midlands are not supportable by the rail network, then surely someone needs to decide which might best fulfil government strategic objectives before we are subjected to numerous expensive, time-consuming and stressful examination processes, which ultimately may only serve to contribute to the failure of a national policy objective. In addition to asking Network Rail to commission the joint study mooted yesterday, we would like to request the examining authority establish the sense behind allowing four so-called strategic rail freight interchanges to be brought forward at exactly the same time on the very section of rail that the National Freight Network is looking to avoid pushing more freight down. The absence of any strategic oversight is starkly exposed by the disjoint between investment in the freight network and the locations currently being promoted for the next generation of SRFIs. Lastly, on the subject of rail, I would like to pick up on Ms. Thompson's understanding of SRFIs yesterday when she quoted that they are built on the premises of build it and they will come in relation to the potential take-up of rail. I would contend that a more apt quote would be build it and they might come, with a corollary, build them in the wrong place or all next to each other and it is highly likely that they won't. One more panel. To finish, I would just like to add that we are a small rural community unanimously opposed to having the largest warehouse park in Europe being thrust upon us and have spent the last 3 years building a credible opposition to these unwanted developments. In fact, some members of the community have been involved in attempting to prevent unwanted industrial incursion into an important strategic gap for many years prior to this. I would therefore like to take this opportunity just to state that while the examining authority may be able to focus their thoughts purely on Northampton Gateway, in any discussion on SRFIs, our local community has no choice but to contemplate implications of a far greater magnitude. Having experienced this at first hand for 3 years now, I don't believe that anyone fighting for the survival of their rural community should have to experience the stresses and personal impositions of something of this magnitude more than once in their lifetime. Certainly not twice, and definitely not twice at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Redding. So, Stephen Blythe, please.
We're on, are we? Yes.
Yes, we're switched on. So,
evening,
Mr. Blythe. Thank
Stephen
you.
Blythe from Road. I'm speaking in my personal capacity, and I promise not to overrun. I have a very simple and, I think you will think, naive question, which I would like to put to the panel. And because it's been raised in various forms to me during the course of this consultation period, so-called, by various members of the public, laymen, who of course will be the victims of the development if it goes ahead, and they are not perhaps able to express what they feel in public. The question is very simple. I would like to ask why this application is being considered at all when it contravenes the provisions of the NSPNN in a number of major aspects. You already have my text. I lodged it on the 2nd of October, so I need not go through it any more than that. In my view, though, I can only feel that the applicant is effectively making an abuse of the process. This is so at odds with the NSPNN as to be absurd. Thank you.
Is that it? Thank you, Mr. Mai. Mr. Coop from Collingtree Parish Council.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, Owen Coop, I'm the Vice Chairman of the Lossall Parish Council. Our main concern, Mr. Chairman, is the pollution that exists. I'll go back to 1959/60, when they opened the M1. The M1 that runs very close to this village. And it was estimated that there would be 13,000 vehicles along this stretch of the motorway. It's more like 100,000 a day now. Then we have the Rockdale development, and they're talking about 5,000 each heavy goods vehicles a day. I don't think the road capacity can take it, but even that to one side. The pollution that's created from these vehicles is horrendous. And this village sits on top of it. The air quality around here is poor already without this extension. We've also got the smart motorway being developed, and that is going to push the motorway close to the literally backyards of people who live in this village. And as Rod Sully said, enough is enough. We've seen too much, and it seems very unfair that this village, a beautiful village, is mentioned in the Magna Carta, I think it's the Magna Carta, that we have to put up with this intolerable vehicles. We all know that pollution's a killer, a silent killer, and we feel sure that you'll take that into consideration, and I hope that you give it a fair hearing, and the residents that live around here a fair assessment and judgment, hopefully now forever. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coop.
Can I say I've got to go? The parish council meeting.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Dino Nola?
Good evening, everyone. I fear I might be repeating the points made by Mark Redding insofar as there's very, very limited rail capacity. And considering the four rail paths a day and the fact that these paths will be shared amongst a variety of FRIs, it may be that on some days there won't actually be any rail goods actually being transmitted for this scheme. So it is no more than a glorified road haulage scheme. So unless there is proper rail, let's not consider this as a viable strategic solution to the country's problems. That's all I really want to say.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Nolan. Those were the only named people that we have who wish to speak. There were some other people who put their hand up and wish to speak. Is there anybody still wishing to speak? Any of those people? Yes, would you like to come forward? Or
I've only got a couple of questions. Right. I'm Paul Heath. I'm a resident in Milton Malsa. I'm very naive as to the procedures involved in all of this, but two questions occur to me. That yesterday it was mentioned that four trains a day are the requirement for designating the project as it is. As I understand, there's no clients for the site. I don't know where the four trains are going to come from, who's going to count them, and if it doesn't achieve four trains, what would then happen? How big is a train is another question. And the other thing I was disturbed to find out, which I'm asking you to confirm, is that should the thing be passed by the Secretary of State, compulsory purchase of land could apply. And that's all I want to say, really.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Heath. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, the gentleman sitting at the front.
Right, my name is Dr. John Davis. I'm a resident of Coventry Park. And my particular point, which hasn't been raised so far, is the traffic at Junction 15. Obviously, with trucks, the amount of trucks going through and the extra capacity required for that, the changes that have been suggested by Roxhill on the layout of the roads is based on a mathematical model and simulation which they have put together, and I've looked at it in this room when they presented it. I'm an expert in Formula One in simulation, including the starts of Formula One cars and the drivers, who are some of the best drivers in the world. The simulation shown was ridiculous in its naivety and its content. It showed several vehicles in a line which wouldn't have a clear view of the traffic lights moving away together, hence saying that a lot of traffic can get going.
Can you speak closer to the mic?
Okay, in truth, people move away one after another. And several other points that are raised, if that simulation is anything they're trying to rely on, it several times showed multiple vehicles at the same point on the road, hence a crash. So the whole mathematics used on that cannot be used with any confidence to simulate the additional traffic that will pass through and the different road out layout, the different speeds around the corners. I would challenge the mathematics of that and suggest that Roxhill should, if they're going to be serious about this, do a simulation that stands up to scrutiny. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Is there anyone else who still wishes to speak? Yes, gentlemen.
Hello. My name's Terry Owen, local resident from near Stoke Bruin. I've actually made a rather large presentation here. It's about 35 slides. And I have a copy on this stick, and I'd be happy for you to take a copy and study it, because it draws out a lot of points which I think are very negative towards the proposed development. Okay.
Right.
So I have your assurance to take that. That'd be good. Could you take that?
Can you just tell us what's
there's an awful lot of points. A lot of points to be made here by people so far. But the reason for me speaking right now is one simple point. Somebody already mentioned that the minimum quota of trains to a rail terminal to qualify as an SRFI is 4. Now, 4 trains constitute only 200 trucks. Okay, and that converts to 200 HGVs per day. So if Roxhill take 4 trains per day, that's only equal to 200 HGVs taken off the roads between here and the ports like Felixstowe. That'll make absolutely no difference to traffic density on the feeder roads. So the reduction in intermodal freight traffic will be insignificant. Okay, so you build a terminal, you won't notice the difference on the M1 or the A45 or A43. Okay, that's my main point. Now, if Roxhill take 16 trains a day, as they claimed at the public hearings several months ago, that is rather a lot of trains. First question is, can they be accommodated by West Coast Main Line? And Durft 3, only 18 miles up the road, will have the capacity, I believe, to handle 64 trains a day. So Roxhill's capacity for taking rail freight is only a quarter of that of Durft 3. And my understanding is that Durft 3 will take the lion's share of the freight traffic on the West Coast Main Line. I think it's 50% from what I've read. The remaining 50% is bound further north and taking freight traffic back down southbound from the north down to London and the ports. Okay, so I think Durft 3 being so big compared to Roxhill, it almost disqualifies Roxhill from consideration. Okay.
Right, thank you. In terms of the evidence that we've got on your memory stick,
yes.
Then we're happy to accept that as a written representation.
Sure.
The deadline for that is the 6th of November.
But okay. You can take it right now, not a problem.
No, we can't take it tonight. But
okay.
If you could speak to Kate outside the hearing, then she'll tell you what we need to do in terms of getting that as evidence for the examination. Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you. Yes, gentlemen at the front.
Hi, my name's Phil Morris. I'm a
didn't catch the name.
Philip Morris, you have me as an affected party.
Right.
So I'm a local resident, Terry's next door neighbour. I'd like to challenge the way the road traffic density study has been done by Roxhill to date. I think it has been insufficient in its findings, its counts and its conclusions. I live on the A508. The A508 is a busy road at the best of times, made doubly busy at the moment by the development in or the resurfacing work through the middle of Toaster. It has basically turned into a continuous flow of traffic 24 hours a day. It is not a road that copes well with that continuous traffic. We have had multiple interactions with Andrea Leadsom over the safety of that road, the speed that vehicles travel that road, the size of vehicles. We have, over the years, seen a significant number of traffic accidents, including fatalities at the Ashton Road, Stoke Bruin Junction on the A508. It's a very poor road for any form of freight traffic. Large vehicles struggle on the road. They, if they're sensible, travel at reduced speed, creating quite a lot of backlog for other local traffic on the roads. If they're not particularly sensible, they create a significant hazard down a single carriageway road between the motorway and Stony Stratford. The other part of my argument about the A508 is actually if anything happens on the M1 locally, north or southbound, or if anything happens to the A5, what we experience is a huge amount of traffic that piles onto the A508 as a rat run, creating a lot of congestion. We see hours of standing traffic, a lot of congestion moving up to the Junction 15 roundabouts, and it's the proposal from Roxhill for the development of the bypass around road and the minor adjustments to the A508 close to our houses just is not going to improve the traffic flow on that road or its safety.
Right. Is that it? Thank you.
That's it.
Yep. Thank you very much, Mr. Morris. I believe there was a hand that went up towards the back of the room earlier.
Yes. Would you like to?
Would you like to come forward? Thanks.
Good evening, sir. My name is Andrew Goff. I'm a local resident. I'd like to pick up on the point made by Dr. Foster relating to traffic simulation. I have grave concerns over the validity of the baseline traffic data that has been used for the modelling, and I'll explain as follows. One of the largest generators of traffic in Northampton is the university, and prior to this academic year, the university was based on two sites to the north and centre of Northampton. As of this year, it has co-located onto a brand new campus at Waterside, just off the A428 Bedford Road. The morning congestion that was associated with the campuses to the north of Northampton has therefore moved much closer to the applicant's development. The baseline data that was available to their consultants to undertake the traffic modelling is therefore fundamentally out of date. 13,000 students and associated staff are based at Northampton, which is one of the largest employers in the area. And my concern is that their traffic modelling, particularly for their impacts on the A45, will have to be revisited in the light of new data relating to the real situation, particularly relating to the morning peak. Thank you.
Okay. Can I just ask, what was the date of the co-location of the university? Do you know?
The campus opened in the first week of October this year.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Goff. Is there anyone else who still wishes to speak? No? Right. Well, thank you all for your various contributions. And can I just, before we close, draw your attention to the examination timetable. As earlier indicated, there is a deadline of the 6th of November for the receipt of written submissions of anything that you've said tonight that you may wish to put in, and for any documents or matters that you want to put in writing to us. I just, again, for those of you that may not be very familiar with the examination procedure, and I'm sure most of you are not, our examination must be completed within 6 months. And at present, we're anticipating that a full 6 months is likely to be needed. So in this case, the examination must close by the 9th of April 2019. And we, following that, have a three-month period in which to write our report and with our recommendations to the Secretary of State. Just looking in terms of our timetable, we do have a date set within the timetable for a second open floor hearing, should anybody request to be heard at a second open floor hearing. The date for that is Thursday, the 14th of March. So, with that, I have nothing further to say other than to thank you all for coming tonight and for the courteous and way in which you have presented your evidence, and I'm sure we probably will be seeing some of you in the future in terms of the examination itself. So thank you and good night. Safe journey.